Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/letstalk.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and kiss here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
I don't wanna hear about that's bad. No, no. Cause all that's bad just makes me sad. Mm-hmm. So every little once in a while, show some love and make me smile.
Guilty or not guilty. All they decided is there probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed and that this defendant was involved in it. If they say yes, if 9 of 12 of them say yes, then charges are filed, and then it would move on to the trial process. It's going to take probably a couple of weeks. They're going to be very careful and deliberate about this. But you know what? You don't know what's going to come out of this because we still don't know what each side has in terms of facts.
New York Times reporting Officer Wilson sustained injury during this struggle in the car. How does that potentially impact the case?
Well, what it does is it gives some hard evidence for the police officer to justify his position saying, look, I was defending myself. Remember, the defense is self-defense. I mean, the shooting took place and the young man tragically died. Question is whether he should be criminally responsible. We go back to George Zimmerman. Remember, George Zimmerman very quickly showed the damage, the injuries that he had to his head in the confrontation with Trayvon Martin. That became very significant, ultimately, for jurors when they decided that it was indeed self-defense. So does this mean, yes, indeed, self-defense will prevail? No, but it does give the police officer something to point to in terms of physical facts.
I'm curious to hear how you would argue on behalf of the police officer. You keep saying self-defense isn't a defense. We read an article this morning in the Washington Post, an op-ed, where an officer wrote in and said, if I'm a cop, if you don't want to get hurt, don't challenge me. And I think a lot of people are wondering, is that a reasonable defense?
You know, when you talk about self-defense, obviously it depends on the facts and circumstance here. There's no doubt that the shooting took place, no doubt that this was because of the man died. The question is, well, what was the young man the aggressor and the police officer had to act in self-defense? If that's the case, then he has something he can argue. It'll be interesting to see whether he will testify in front of the grand jury. He's given that ability. At some point in time, your defense is in self-defense. You're going to have to tell your story in some fashion or other. So the decision for his lawyer might be, do we tell it sooner rather than later in the hopes of if the grand jury accepts what he's saying and does believe he acted in self-defense, there might be no charges coming out of this. Or do you wait, if you get indicted, tell your story at a trial and try and convince a jury? Again, standard is different. Standard proof is different there. But so it's one of the issues here is going to be, when will we hear from the police officer as he offers up his defense of self-defense?
Jack Ford, fascinating discussion. Thank you very much.
The car series different mood. They're mood green, mood light, mood music. Why not a mood light? With Cadillac.
The man who says he recorded...
Let's Talk is happy to be sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audibletrial.com/letstalk, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service.
Men in Kevlar vests and helmets, camouflage, carrying automatic rifles, moving in tactical armored vehicles. These aren't American troops on the battlefield, but police in Ferguson. One observer says he thought he saw police in an MRAP.
An MRAP is a mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicle. It's built to withstand armor-piercing bombs. This is not something that we need in American communities.
But Kara Dansky of the ACLU says more than 500 MRAPs have made their way from Afghanistan and Iraq to local police forces in America just over the past couple of years. It's part of what the ACLU, in a recent report, called the excessive militarization of American policing. Indications of that are everywhere in Ferguson. Police in these towns are getting much of this combat equipment, free of charge, from the Pentagon. The Defense Department says just in 2013, nearly $450 million worth of military equipment was given to law enforcement. A defense official says Ferguson police only got a couple of Humvees and a trailer. But police departments throughout Missouri, which are assisting in Ferguson, got 20 MRAPs and hundreds of M16 rifles in recent years. Critics say often when they get these weapons, policemen's attitudes change.
Bring it!
Increasingly, the police are trained to view the people in the communities that they're supposed to be protecting and serving as enemies.
It's not just their possession of all this equipment that's an issue. Watchdog groups say many of these police departments lack the training in how to use these weapons responsibly, and that often escalates the dangers. Dangers like police overreacting when conducting minor operations like serving search warrants.
They will drive up in an armored personnel carrier, raid a person's home, holding assault rifles, holding people at gunpoint, yelling at everyone to get on the floor. This is an extremely traumatic experience, and we've seen over and over again situations like this where people are traumatized and sometimes people are injured and killed.
But current and former police say criminals have increasingly more firepower and law enforcement can't afford to be outgunned.
If people are shooting at the police and committing looting and other violent acts, then the police need to protect themselves.
The Defense Department supports this trend overall. While it would take you or me 4 to 6 weeks and unending hassle and documentation to secure a passport, as reported by the Washington Post, your local police force need only fill out a one-page form for an armored personnel carrier.
Again, with some breaking news this hour, an alleged audio recording of the moment Michael Brown was shot. The FBI has questioned a man who says he recorded the audio of gunshots at the time Michael Brown was shot by Ferguson police on August 9th. That is according to his attorney. CNN cannot independently verify the authenticity of the tape and has reached out to the FBI for confirmation of their interview with Ferguson residents who says he made the recording. Here it is. Listen.
You are crazy. You're so funny. Just going on with some of your videos. I'll try to ask you again.
So joining me now is Lopa Blumenthal. She is the attorney. We're hearing on this tape your client, Lopa, having a video chat with a friend, doing normal, whatever you do, and you can hear the gunshot in the background. Explain to us what happened.
That's right. He was... in his apartment, he was talking to a friend on a video chat. He heard loud noises, and at the moment, at the time, he didn't even realize the import of what he was hearing until afterwards. And it just happened to have captured 12 seconds of what transpired outside of his building.
Okay, let's listen one more time to see what happened.
You are pretty. You're so pretty. It's going on with some of your videos.
Okay, you have been interviewed by the FBI. He has been interviewed by...
It's a young mother in the car with four kids. When police pulled them over, slapped handcuffs on the mom, all caught on dash cam video, but it turned out to be a bad case of mistaken identity. You must have a complicated detail. Good morning, Mara.
George, good morning. Mistaken identity is right. They stopped the wrong car while looking for a driver with a gun. That mom was just trying to get her kids and godkids home, and it ended up being a ride they won't soon forget. It's a highly charged traffic stop.
Hey, let me see your hands. I might stick a hand out the window.
New dash cam video showing Texas police officers pulling over a car just outside Dallas. Guns drawn.
Welcome back to Fairmont.
The problem? Foreign police admit they got the wrong car. This is law-abiding mom, Kenitra Barber.
What is wrong?
My kids! In the car, four kids under the age of 10. Walking in Barber is handcuffed.
What is this? What is going on? Oh, my God, you care about my children.
Moments later, Barber's terrified son, just 6 years old, comes out with his hands up.
Like being angry all over.
It all started with a 911 call describing a vehicle speeding down the highway, the driver waving a gun out the window.
It is going to be a beige or tan-colored Toyota occupied by four black males.
But Barbara's car, a burgundy Maxima, doesn't match the description at all. The caller even tells police they've made a mistake. The real suspect's getting away.
I believe they may have got the wrong car back there.
It's very shocking. I can't imagine what them kids went through.
I tried. You know, I had kids. It's hard to imagine.
In the video, the police quickly realize the passengers are children.
They look young.
and that they've made a terrible mistake. They immediately start working to calm the kids.
No,
police apologized to Barber appropriately for what they thought was a dangerous situation.
For the nature of the call, that a weapon was involved, yes.
But Barber can't let this stop go.
Every time I listen to or hear or think about it, I can't just say, okay, I'm fine. It's okay. It's not a big deal. It is.
Now, in a statement, Corning police say the officers acted accordingly and professionally based on the information they were given, and they adjusted their methods accordingly when the situation presented itself to be otherwise. So you have to wonder, a tan Toyota versus a burgundy Maxima is a very different car.
Yeah. I'm glad they made up for it fast. Again, thanks so much.
Whole concept of whiteness, if you know the history of the whole concept of the white race, where it came from and for what reason, you know that it was a trick, and it's worked brilliantly. See, prior to the mid to late 1600s in the colonies of what would become the United States, there was no such thing as the white race. Those of us of European descent did not refer to ourselves by that term really ever before then. In fact, in the old countries of Europe, we had spent most of our time killing each other. We didn't love each other. We weren't one big happy family. The side of my family that comes from Scotland, hell, they didn't even worry about fighting people outside of Scotland. Highlanders and Lowlanders just fought the hell out of each other. So there was no white race. But in the colonies of what would become the United States, what did we see in the 1660s, 1670s? We began to see that Africans of indentured servant status, many of them not enslaved yet, they were not necessarily permanently enslaved. Some were, others were indentured like many poor Europeans for periods of 7 to 11 years. They could work off their indenture and then they would be free labor technically. Realized, as did the white indentured servants, the Europeans, who hadn't even been called white yet, that they had a lot of things in common, like the fact that they were all getting their clock cleaned by the elite. And so they would get together, more than our history books taught us, to foment rebellion against the elite, to try to get a better deal for themselves on the basis of economic necessity and economic justice. And what did the elite do? When you see that you're outnumbered by black and white folks who are penniless, landless, peasants, you have to do one of two things. You either have to kill them all, but you can't do that because who's going to work? Rich folks weren't going to. They had to get poor people to work. The whole point was to be a person of leisure back in those days. That was the goal, was not to work. So you couldn't kill them all. You didn't want to kill them all. You had to do the work yourself, not to build your own levee, build your own house. No, pick your own tobacco, harvest your own cotton. No, we're not going to do any of that. So you can't kill them, but you can co-opt them. And so the elite in Virginia, for example, in the colony, begins to give certain carrots to people of European descent, saying things like, you know, we're going to let you own a little land, not much, but just a little. And we're going to get rid of indentured servitude. Now you're free labor. And by the way, once you're free labor, you get 50 acres of land just because you're free labor, see. So we're going to cut you in on this deal. We're going to let you enter into contracts. We're going to let you testify in court. And here's the best of all. We're going to put you on the slave patrol to keep those people in line. Right? The idea was you're still going to get your clock clean. We still don't like you. We still aren't going to really empower you or change your economic subordination. But we're going to make you honorary members of this team, and you're going to help us keep those other people down. So they got a little taste of power, and it did effectively divide and conquer those coalitions. Those rebellions began to stop almost instantly. Fast forward to the Civil War era. You have rich white folks in the South, where I come from, standing up and openly admitting that the reason they're prepared to secede from the Union, and the only reason they ever articulated publicly, ever, was to maintain and extend slavery and white supremacy not only where it already existed, but into the newly acquired, that is to say, stolen territories from Mexico to the West. That was what they said. Now we lie about it. We say it wasn't about slavery. It was about states' rights. Yes, the right of the states to keep and maintain slaves, exactly. But back then they had no shame, so they didn't try and cover it up. They openly said it, but once again, the rich didn't want to go do the work. Are you kidding? No. They're going to get poor people to go fight for them. And the poor folks didn't even own slaves. Now think, how do you get poor people who don't even own the shirt on their back, let alone slaves, to go fight to keep your slaves for you? You've got to convince them that their skin is more important than their economic interest, because think about it. If I am a farmer who has to charge you $1 a day or $2 a week to work on your farm and harvest that tobacco or pick that cotton, but you can get a black person to do it for free because you own them, who's going to get the job? Not me. In other words, slavery actually undermines the wages and the wage-based economic floor of the typical white working class or low-income person. But they were told, people are free, they're going to take your job. No, fool, they got your job. That's the point. And so at some level, again, working class white people being harmed by white privilege, relatively being advantaged, right? Being given a leg up, being given a membership to the club, but in absolute terms being kept economically subordinated by the very thing that gave them a sense of superiority. How's that for irony? Then in the present era, this hasn't stopped. This is not ancient history. Now we have people running around insisting that we should close the border with Mexico because if we don't, the wages of working class people will continue to fall, the implication being that the only reason workers are paid like crap in this country is because the border is open. But if you believe that, you would actually have to believe that if that border were closed, that all these owners of capital and industry would just say, oh, well, you figured us out. Here, it's a raise. Do we really believe that the only thing keeping bosses from paying people more is the presence of low-wage, medium, semi-skilled labor from south of this artificial border? Is that really what we believe? We know that if that border is closed, it isn't going to be closed to capital. It isn't going to be closed to goods. If you have a border that can be crossed by capital looking for the highest return on investment or goods looking for the highest price, but labor is chained to its country of origin, how is that going to work to the benefit of working people? By definition, it doesn't. By definition, it immiserates the working class. Divide and conquer. But the best example of all, perhaps, in the contemporary era in the greater New Orleans area after Katrina. Here you have two communities that were the most hard hit. Lower Ninth Ward, mostly black community, 94% African American, about 40% official poverty rate, heavy working class community. And right across the canal, St. Bernard Parish, Chalmette, 95% white, also working class, high levels of poverty, economically very similar. And at the end of the day, in those first few days of September 2005, more similar than they probably would have realized. Because when those levees broke, they all got their stuff jacked. They all got their stuff destroyed. But if you had asked white folks in Chalmette, and I've done it, who was the cause of the problems in that greater New Orleans area prior to that flooding, they would have pointed across that canal at those black folks, wouldn't have called them black folks, and would have said there. That's the problem. 70% of the white folks in St. Bernard Parish voted for David Duke, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, former head of the largest Ku Klux Klan group in the United States when he ran for governor in 1991. 7 out of 10 gladly voted for him because he was blaming black folks for all of their problems, and they bought it. What's the irony? The irony is that while they were blaming black people for their problems, while they were blaming black people for the conditions of the greater New Orleans area in which they lived, nobody was paying attention, least of all they, to the fact that these white elite politicians, either in Baton Rouge or in Washington, whose job it was to secure those levies, to make sure that levy funds were spent in the proper way and that they were spent at all, those mostly white and mostly elite politicians did nothing. At the end of the day, it wasn't just the black folks in the lower ninth ward they didn't care about. They really couldn't have given a rat's ass about those poor and working-class white folks either. And yet, when the people of Chalmette, people of St. Bernard Parish got back into session, first time they had a city council meeting, parish council meeting after the flooding, the lights aren't even on yet. The water isn't even hooked up. And the first order of business was to pass an ordinance saying that you couldn't rent property in St. Bernard Parish to anyone who wasn't a blood relative. Now, I'll leave it to your imagination as to why you want to pass a law. That law had never existed before, but now that it's been emptied out and you don't know who might come back, that's a damn good way to keep black people out, isn't it? Because if you're 95% white to begin with, if you pass an ordinance that says that, that's a great way. You can't say no blacks need apply. You can't say no blacks allowed, but that was an ingenious way to get around the law. Now, they got caught. There was a lawsuit threatened, and they got rid of the ordinance. But my point in bringing it up is to say, once again, divide and conquer is working. These white folks in Chalmette need to march across that canal and join hands with the black folks who've been sitting there more than willing to work with them for an awful long time and march on Baton Rouge and march on D.C. and march on the Corps of Engineers and recognize their commonality of interest. But the whiteness and the lure of whiteness has tricked these have nothing in their bank account, white people, into believing that they got more in common with the rich white folks on St. Charles Avenue that didn't lose anything in that flooding than they have in common with the black working class folks who live about 500 yards away.
Ferguson, Missouri has been inundated by local, national, and international press ever since the fatal shooting and killing of unarmed African-American teenager Michael Brown by police officer Darren Wilson. We've been speaking with local residents here, both about the job they feel the media has done and what the media should be doing in covering the killing of Brown and subsequent protests.
You know, you described what's happening here earlier as a revolution. Do you think... What role is the media playing in suppressing this revolution as you describe it?
I think it's interesting because there is definitely a division. I see people going to Twitter, Facebook, blogs, that sort of independent media to get the story behind the story. And then I see other people that are just going to mainstream media and
and we are all wrong. The young people shouldn't be mad. You know, if you are white male, you don't fear the police. You don't fear the police. But that's teenage at the college. You know, you don't fear the police. But you can get a little 5-year-old black boy, and he's scared of the police already. So what does that say? If he's 5 and 5, he should be playing and on his bike. He shouldn't know terror from the police in his neighborhood, but he does because maybe his brother went through it or maybe his mother went through it, but somebody then went through it. Well, he's scared of the police already.
And so what role do you think the media should be playing in events like this?
I think it's all in shuffle right now. I think that mainstream media is increasingly becoming a bit more obsolete. More people are getting their news online. Antonio French via Twitter, you know, I don't even tweet. I'm part of that generation. I'm like, you're on Twitter, and I was like, I don't even tweet. So, but I know friends that all over the world were following Antonio's Twitter feed and getting up to the minute insight into what was going on, and because it was so relevant and so current that you could get a sense of what was going on, it was fair coverage. So I think that there's a shuffle going on. The same tension that you see in black and white communities, that tension is going on between independents and mainstream media.
Do you think things change once there's like the white reporters that are getting pushed around and geared up and things?
Absolutely.
I'm glad that happened. I'm not going to lie to you. I am really glad that they were out here in the trenches. The night they gassed for like 4 nights, and the last night that they gassed, we were out here, and it was peaceful. They made us march around. We couldn't stand still. And for 30 minutes, they told the reporters, the media, to go up to Soloway. They had a little area for them. And everybody else, they came all the way down to Northland, where the quick trip is. And for 30 minutes, they said, stop, get you in front of the quick trip. Stop throwing rocks. Literally for 30 minutes. And it just bothered us because it's like, we're close. And we're like, who is that there? So that made us get closer. So seeing this, there's nobody down there. But they said it over and over again to put it in your mind. Okay, so you would say, oh, it was people down there. Can't even get your name together.
And now they're shooting you with rubber bullets. And when I say I'm glad some of the media got shot with rubber bullets, and I have to give it to the hardcore media that was down there. They had on helmets and gas masks, and they were trying to get the pictures because there was no pictures of anybody. They said they were throwing Molotov cocktails. There was no pictures from that night of anybody throwing Molotov cocktails. So, I tell people, stop the mainstream media, stop listening to them. They're lying. And they listen to the police. If the police come back and say, yeah, they were throwing rocks and they were throwing Molotov cocktails in the mainstream media, each of them say this is what's going on. And we need people like y'all out here getting, you know, the real story about really what's going on out here.
And how could the mainstream media help what you're doing, help this case for justice? What kind of story do you want them to be covering?
I want them to not only cover this story in depth and truthfully, but I want them to cover why this is happening to so many young black men, and it's getting swept up under the rug.
The reality is that everybody says that this issue, you know, I hear this a lot from the white community, oh, everybody's making it about race. Well, it is about race. I mean, the fact of the matter is that men of color are racially profiled. They have a higher incarceration rate, not because they're doing more bad things, but because they're racially profiled. You know, we know this. This has been established. But nobody covers that. No, and you can't talk about the issues of race, class, and privilege, which run very thickly through this, in a soundbite. But it's a complex issue, and I think that the mainstream media wants to distill it down to a soundbite. And it's far more complex than that. And in order to have a real conversation, you have to sort of unpeel layers and do some true investigative reporting.
And so at this moment, make clear for this community whose interest the mainstream media serves.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We have not long before this, right?
Oh, my goodness.
You love the
ask any young teenage black man. You know, ask them how do they feel about how they're getting treated in their own community. I don't care. You can be one who you can work with blind kids. You can walk dogs for free. You could be in the community. You could be a Boy Scout and Girl Scout. You can graduate. You can go to high school. But when you get done, when they make an assumption because of skin color, it's like you're doomed before you got started.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're doomed. And that's what they do. They don't get to know these children. My daughter lived out here about a year and a half ago when I have two nephews, her boyfriend, and my son, who came back and forth. I live in Ferguson, so you can literally jump my fence and be on Wisconsin. So they came back and forth here constantly when she lived here. And it was two different instances where the police pulled up on them and told them to get the F off the street. So when I heard that from that young man, I said, my husband, because I said, that could have been my children. It was an instance where my two nephews were walking down the street, and they were handcuffed and had their book bag searched. Why?
It's
not
uncommon here.
Ask these young people
what's going on, and I bet you 100% of the time you're going to get the same story of a situation where they were driving while black, walking while black. I didn't think these police pull over people on bicycles. And I always say to myself, and I laugh, but it's so serious, what could a person on a bicycle have been?
And I also want to talk about
the orbital fracture that the officer, like, supposedly had, which was released by the police department, which totally came to be unbalanced.
And Fox published that.
Yeah. And then, you know, there was the tape, the everybody's trying to rush to get deadline. That they're not checking their facts, and then kills the people who are like, oh, we're supposed to be Darren Wilson, and we're like raising $350,000 with Jason Thomas.
So they've raised more money for him than they can raise for.
And the comments. Don't look at the comments. Yes, they don't make it about
you. And I've been from the NPR every day on the way here. I was listening to NPR report, where they was, asking the people at the
in beforehand. They just asked them what they think about what's going on. And a guy was like, well, we should wait for all the facts out. Well, y'all don't know all the facts. You know, but I believe the three eyewitnesses.
Talk is happy to be sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audibletrial.com/letstalk, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service.
Greetings to all of our beloved BTR family, and welcome to another Tuesday edition of Let's Talk with Eric Jackson, Mr. Talk. As you notice, Mr. Talk won't be joining us today, but he will be back tomorrow, so I hope you guys don't mind me temporarily filling in. This is Cloud Nation broadcasting live and direct. Today is definitely Talk to Me Tuesday, as I said before, so share what's on your mind. We played a couple of clips. I know you guys noticed it pretty long. You know, we covered a bit of Mike Brown and Ferguson, different interviews regarding that subject matter. We covered a Texas mother, Kametra Barber. Her children were mistakenly pulled over at gunpoint with her six-year-old boy. They exited with their hands up, and you got a chance to see them dealing with an altercation with the police. We also had a clip from Tim Wise as he lectured. It was a lecture called White Privilege. We put the link in the room. And you also heard Jasaul Noor interviewing a few locals in the area of Ferguson, Missouri. So as I said before, whatever is on your mind, we're going to be opening up the mics live. Press number one. If you're ready to talk, and we want to hear from you. That's why you heard me playing a lot of clips, a lot of different recordings, because honestly, I don't have a lot to say today. I really want to hear what's on the minds of everybody else. I'm definitely been out of the loop with my work schedule, so it's a lot I've missed. So I want to hear from everyone else who's had the time to digest, to reflect, and to continue to observe all the stuff that's happening, all the new happenings all around in the media, in the streets, in the community, so on. So, like I said, press button number one. I know we had a couple people listening live, and at the moment, peers, no one wants to speak. I think I see Pianki wants to talk, so I'm going to open up his mic. Hello, sir. Your mic is open.
My wife didn't come home last night, and Mr. Talk is not here today. What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah?
You going to tell me something?
Sometimes quite obvious.
Yeah. You're going to tell me some of the things that's been going on in Missouri, in Ferguson? Because I know you're one of the people that's actually in the state of Missouri, so I'm sure you have a better handle on some of the happenings than someone like myself on the outside looking in.
Well, it's the same old thing everywhere. Ferguson is not too far from. I know the area very well. You got a town that's got a majority of black population, these white cops that come from miles around into these areas. And that needs to change. The police force, the public works, city hall, the school district, teachers and staff, contracts need to reflect the people that they serve. As simple as that. That officer came from Crestwood, which is way south, about 30 miles, and your kid could not go to his town and get a job on the police force. So you find all these, and you know, here's another point too. Luke, he came from Jennings, Missouri, which is adjacent. Well, not really. You got Ferguson, you got Country Club Hills, then you got Jennings. You know, it's just like you can have one town on one side of the street, another town on the other side of the street, the way things are structured. But Jennings had to dissolve its police department because there was so many complaints of black residents complaining about the treatment that the police was giving them, and the police department was about 100% white. So, and that's, Jennings have a long history of abusing blacks. I'm talking about 40 years. That was one area you never did go into. So if Mr. Wilson worked there, he had to be influenced by that. I mean, it's no simple synopsis than that. So wow. That is the status.
And have they released any new evidence since the, you know, recently regarding what actually happened in this
altercation? Well, I don't think anything's going to happen to him. Because the prosecutor, Bob McCullough, he's a long-standing racist prosecutor, going back to many instances, including the Jack in the Box, where two black males was killed. It just so happened that the police chief of Ferguson was over that detail at that particular time. So him and McCullough are pretty good friends.
Wow. And I started to think about, you know, just some of the all the stuff that's been going on in that particular city. And I thought about, I knew that there were definitely underlying issues, unresolved issues that appeared to be festering up. And from what I've been hearing, there's a large population of African Americans in Ferguson, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct in that?
Well, you got these. You can have these towns, villages, towns that's right next door to one another. Some have varying degrees of numbers of population. When blacks was forced out of the city through what was called a Team 4 plan, look it up on your internet, and now they find themselves in these what was previously all white communities. Whites, blacks come in, whites move out. But the police force, the fire department, and those other government agencies still remain white based on the good old boy system. And that has to change. The lowest degree of policing is the small municipalities and villages. The highest degree of policing is the highway patrol. So that's why come the governor placed that one black captain to come in and take control of ground operation. He basically stripped the police chief, Mr. Jackson, of his powers. Not totally.
Wow. And so going forward, have they decided on whether when a trial date or when there will be a trial date?
No, it's being heard by a grand jury right now. The grand jury have to decide whether or not it's enough evidence or this, that, and the other to proceed with indictment.
Also, some, like I said, another piece of information that I came across was that the family was, Michael Brown's family was raising capital. I don't know if it was for, I'm assuming, to prepare for the case, I'm guessing for legal fees. Or is that, no, it was for a memorial, I believe. Yeah. Now,
well, all his arrangements was taken care of.
Okay.
Through organization, community, and so on, so on, so on.
And do you know anybody who attended the funeral, or did you have get the opportunity to attend the funeral?
No, you couldn't get near that place. It was overwhelmed, helicopters and everything else. Al Sharpton done a very good job in the eulogy. Motorcycle riders, bike riders, joggers, church folks. Very well attended. Obama sent representatives from the White House. Everybody was there but James Brown.
Everybody but James Brown. So collectively, is there any plans or anything going on in Missouri, in Ferguson in particular, regarding the African-American community? Are they starting? Have you noticed any changes of people coming together, trying to push forward any efforts
to empower
the community?
There's no people going. There's no people going to come together. Ferguson don't have no white population except for the old whites that's there just waiting to die. I mean, that's just the way it is in North County, North City, North County, even South City now. South City has 80,000 Bosnian refugees over there. Yeah, Team Four drew a drawing line, Del Mar to the south, Natural Bridge to the north, Grand to the east, and City Limits to the west. And everything in that area was redlined, couldn't get insurance, a lot of paying out the nose, cutting services like trash pickup, police services, and so on, so on, so on. So basically what it done is forced people out. That's another story.
And did you get a chance to hear some of the other clips too? The one regarding the incident in Texas. What did you think about that particular one? Have you come across that?
Well, that goes on. You know, here in Lincoln County, this area, you had another Michael Brown that was killed by the police under very shady circumstances. But this Michael Brown was white. Whites don't come out in mass and protest like they should. But see, the thing that allows police to get away with these things is the state law as it defines lethal force. It's a state statute. It's very broad, never precise, not precise, not to the point. And the agencies that it applied to, those agency heads will interpret that statute as they think it should mean. And then they will draw up rules and regulations that govern the behavior of the people that's working in the agency. So, you know, there's a movement to have our state representatives, the black state representatives, to begin an initiation to have that statute revised where it become more specific. Then once you have that, you make sure that the rules that these agencies put forth, it's the same thing with the federal level. You know, Congress passed statutes, and agencies, whether it's Internal Revenue Service, whether it's Department of Agriculture, whether it's Department of Education, they interpret those statutes and they draw up guidelines and rules. Internal Revenue Service is a Code of Federal Regulations, number statute number 26. So internal head of Internal Revenue Service, the treasurer, they draw up rules and regulations that's about 3 foot thick based on the interpretation. If you got a problem with it, then you take it to court. So that's what needs to be done here in Missouri, and I'm sure any other state, is that lethal force should be more confined when a officer can use that. And that way you constrain them. And if they go beyond those constraints, then they are subject to punishment. They are subject to a person who's aggrieved to go after their bond, because every city employee has to be bonded in case they go out there and do something, hurt somebody and stuff like that. You go beyond their bond and go after their personal effects, their cars, their boats, their rifles and guns, their house, their skulls, chewing tobacco. Go after all those things.
That makes perfect sense. I recently heard someone talking about the possibility of using cameras. I think putting cameras on the police.
That's
right. To know
that's
what,
a proposal.
What your thoughts were on that?
Having police cars that have dash and deck cameras and camera also on the police personal body as he come in contact with
exactly.
the citizens, so that it can be videotaped. The storage should be uploaded to a separate, to an independent facility, an independent place, whereas the police can't edit it. That video, and if they do, you know, the terms of punishment should be very, very harsh. There should be a movement to change the racial makeup, ethnic makeup of these police forces. The only one in this area that has a makeup, a balance that resembles the people that this service is representing is University City, where the population of blacks, I believe, is 41%. They got 42% blacks on the police force. But you got some 100% black municipalities that the police department is 100% white. And that stuff has to change. It's an economic problem, for one. Then it's all sort of social things that go on there. With this captain that was, this highway patrol captain that was placed in charge, heck, you had people standing in line to shake his hand and hug him. When in hell have you ever seen that in modern times, having to deal with the police, especially in the black community?
No, that makes perfect sense. I mean, and it sounds like adding cameras would definitely be a good decision. You also said implementing certain legislation, right?
It's the law. It's not about morals. It's not about sensitivity training. It's not about you respect. It's the law. When you go outside of the law, then you punish. So you have laws to constrain people. That's working employees. You have laws to constrain them. You got rules and regulations that constrain them based on laws, should I say. Heck, you had another case where police shot Mr. Powell. They was 30 feet from him on either side of him. He had a butter knife. Why come they didn't use their taser? Where's all the money we that the citizens spent for tasers? And heck no, I don't think police departments need to have military equipment. Talking about they outgunned. Well, hell, you driving down the street, you run into a group of people that's got the whatever. So you mean tell me you're going to pause everything and run back to the yard and get a tank and come back? That don't make no damn sense. Something's wrong with that picture.
No, I totally agree. What's the condition of that local economy? What is that like for the black community?
It's
there?
At the bottom of the bottoms. If you should tell you something that if the people that works on the fire department, they white, you know, police department white. You got 53 police officers, 3 black, rest of them white. Your public works. So that has to change. Blacks are living in that community and paying taxes. They should have access to those jobs, those local jobs, those government jobs that their taxes are paying for. As I said before, black kids cannot go, black teenagers can't go into Crestwood. They can't go down in the South County shopping mall and alleviate their unemployment. And hell, by the time they travel that damn far, what do you got left? You talking about 25, 30 miles. They don't have no bus service that's readily available into the area. You know, they don't have public transportation, light rail coming out of black communities, going into white communities. They tried that here to go into St. Charles, and whites say we didn't want blacks taking the Metrolink into St. Charles, breaking in their houses, taking their TV, getting on the Metrolink and coming back to the hood.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's a lot of issues going on that contributed to a lot of the outrage that's going on right now.
Well, that's what it is. People get fed up.
Again, if anybody wants to add, press one, and we'll bring you in.
Then you got police there. You had police there in those protests. They didn't even have, well, you don't know if they're police or not. They had white males with uniforms, no badge, and no nameplate. So to me, they're just a common citizen. You could have that as a Halloween costume. They don't have no business being on the job, unidentifiable. You work on a job, people know who you are, right? You try to get into the place, you got to present proper identification to get in. So in a case like that, you don't know what the heck's all going on, especially nowadays. You know, back in the day you did, it's pretty obvious. But nowadays, there's all sort of demonic schemes and tactics that's being used by unsavory people who has tractionist agendas. And it is what it is. It has to be dealt with differently. Matter of fact, they got a meeting here at 6 o'clock at Harris Stowe. Public meeting.
You said you had a meeting?
Yeah, it's called like a town hall meeting that's held at one of the St. Louis universities.
Yeah, 770, we just let you in. Your mic is open.
Thanks for taking my call there, Mr. Talk. This is Sarge. I spoke to you before about this very topic. essentially.
Oh, this is actually Cloud Nation. This isn't Mr. Talk, but welcome to the show, Sarge.
Okay, well, I thought you were. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, and I suppose the topic du jour is, of course, the shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, and Mike Brown.
Well, it's an open discussion, so we played clips, several different clips, and that was, some of the clips were connected to Ferguson. So in this very moment, we're talking about that. But, you know, whatever you want to talk about. Ferguson,
I'd love to talk about that,
sir. Anything else that's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I'd love to talk about that because, believe me, I think this is going to be another one of those maximum cultural divide subjects. I mean, the racial industrial complex led by the racial industrial complex lynch mob is braying in full force, just like they were for Trayvon Martin, heedless and irregardless of the facts and what the evidence tends to point toward. It doesn't make any difference. These people are doing the same thing all over again. They cannot be embarrassed. And there aren't enough, there simply aren't enough venues that hold them to account for the things that they say, even when they're shown to be wrong by factual, corroborable evidence. And there doesn't seem to be any way to get around. I mean, apparently this is a new state of affairs. You know, reality is what we say it is, not what it actually is. And it's not going to do any of us any good. I'd like to contrast this time today with another time in United States history. Well, it wasn't United States history, actually, because it was in 1770, in the winter of 1770. It was a place called Boston. And there was a little event called the Boston Massacre. Now, there was a gentleman around at that time. Now, you may have heard of him. He was John Adams, you know, the second president of the United States. And John Adams was a lawyer. And he was one of the great patriots of the Revolution. John Adams, without John Adams, you know, the United States might not have won the Revolutionary War. He was instrumental in seeing the Revolution through to victory. But you know what? He believed in justice. And so did many of the people back then. They believed in justice and fair play and the rule of law. And so even though John Adams was a patriot and he sympathized completely with the patriot cause and the Revolution, he was against the British occupation of Boston and all that, he recognized that those British soldiers had a right to defend themselves against a mob that probably would have severely injured them or killed them. And he took their case up and won in court. And what was even more surprising is that the colonials who made up the jury that tried these British soldiers, they might have, some of them may have been part of the mob that was screaming for their blood. But, you know, these jurors were culturally disposed to doing justice. And, you know, I mean, even though they were, like I said, they were enraged by these troops, as I would have been, I would join the revolution. You know, but even they went where facts and common sense took them, even at the cost of satisfying their own emotional predilections. Now, what we're looking at here in Ferguson is something entirely different, entirely contrary. It's like you see in the Arab street. We know when the Arabs go crazy about something or other, some picture of Muhammad or something. It's an abandonment of reason. It's an embrace of demagoguery. It's mob mentality run wild. I don't like it one little bit, and I ain't putting up with it. I look, and if people want to say, well, you know, you a race traitor or something, I don't care. We won't have a civilization we give in this kind of demagoguery. Now, this cop may have done something wrong. I'm waiting to see the evidence that he did, and if he did, let's punish him. But they don't know, not based on what's been released so far, and all the contradictory stuff they came out with when it first came out, like the witnesses that he was shot in the back. We now know none of those bullets entered him from the back. One entered from the top of his skull and came out through his right eye. But all that other stuff was a lie, and more of the stuff appears to be contradicted by other evidence. I'm willing to wait to see what the facts are. These people aren't, and that's the difference.
Well, it's interesting that you said that. Can I call you Sarge? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay.
It's interesting that you used John Adams as an example of fairness and as an example of someone who believed in, you know, rights for all. Am I misquoting you on that?
No, well, what I meant to say is that John Adam believed in the rule of law, number one. The rule of law at the time that they were tried, they were a British colony. That was British common law that was at work there. They were tried by a jury, a civil jury that had been convened in Boston to try them on charges of manslaughter and murder. And he defended them in court. Now, remember, when the revolution started, John Adams would have been one of the ones. If they'd have lost, he'd have been hanged or put away in a dungeon for the rest of his life. So, I mean, there wasn't nobody could doubt his commitment to the cause, but he understood the rule of law and justice. And that's what he tried to get and did, in fact, get for those British soldiers. They had a right to defend themselves against a lawless mob.
So I just want to make sure I have proper understanding. So you're saying, you said the rule of law. I keep
yeah, the rule of law. Right.
At that time. And so are you saying, by saying that he kept with the rule of law, are you saying that he was, a righteous man or a, meaning righteous and just? Meaning just, not in a religious term, but just man, or are you saying he was, you know, a guy who followed all the rules, so to speak? Is that what you're saying about him?
I don't mean blindly using John Adams. Well, don't misunderstand me by saying that merely the rule of law. I mean, after all, the racial Nuremberg laws of 1935 were the rule of law in Germany, too. They were legally passed by the Reichstag, and they were enacted as a law, and they were the law in Germany. So, you know, all law is not moral or just. But certainly laws of self-defense are universally accepted as proper and just. There isn't much controversy about every human being has an inalienable right of morally justified self-defense. There's no argument about that. Now, of course, there's argument about things like racial Nuremberg laws and stuff like that, Jim Crow laws, stuff like that. But in the sense that he was defending these British soldiers against an attack on their lives by a mob, unprovoked attack by a mob, other than the fact they wore red uniforms, there wasn't much controversy about the fact, that, at least to John Adams, that he should defend himself against them. And this police officer apparently had justification to believe that his life or his health was in serious physical danger from a man who probably already fractured his eye socket in a fight for his gun where a shot went off near the squad car. And was coming back for him again, all 6 feet four, 300 pounds of it.
You know, this shouldn't be as difficult as it was when the Ferguson Police Department locked up a black man, beat him in the cell, and ultimately the only charge that.
Bianchi, and Justin Bopey's doing life in prison for that one. You didn't know that, don't you?
The only charges that they could come up with was that the black man bloodied their uniforms.
I'm talking about Abner Louima in New York with the plunger and the sodomized by
Justin
Bolton.
I said he went to jail for life. I said Ferguson. The topic, the center stage spotlight is on Ferguson. I was just bringing to light some of the crepiness that comes out of this particular area with these police officers.
Ferguson, I don't think it happened in Ferguson. It might have happened in Missouri. It didn't happen in Ferguson. I mean, they got different jurisdictions, you know. All cops ain't
no,
the same
when,
jurisdiction.
When this black man was charged, he was charged with bloodying their uniforms. That was the only charge they can come up with. The man was driving down 270 in a torrential downpour. He pulled over.
What city was this in again?
This is Ferguson.
When was this?
Well, it's one of the continuing sagas of this town. Not really this town, because all these little municipalities have the same problem.
Well,
but
even if they
over.
Did that, even if they did that, you know, one idiotic charge does not negate a justifiable homicide by a police officer. Even if what you said is true.
There's not just one. Matter of fact, it's a court case. Court case shows where. The police officers themselves, under this police chief, Mr. Jackson, maintain their own files. They put in their files what they want.
Then
in some cases, they can't even find their personnel.
Hold them for that. Hold them accountable for it. What do you think? If they did that, they shouldn't be held accountable for it? Because I hope you don't think I'm saying that, because I'm not. I'm saying in the case of Darren Wilson and Mike Brown, that's causing all the rioting, I don't see this epidemic of homicides of black men being committed by the police nationwide all day, every day. This 28 hours mantra is nonsense.
Well, it is being done, and the issue here is
and how many are
these black people. Well, Sarge, let me tell you something. Now, you and I cannot talk at the same time. Now, you tell me when you're ready for me to talk.
All right. Well, just one more thing here. 100 homicides of black men last year, and most of them were by police. Talking about by sworn statutory power of arrest police officers.
We're talking about
vigilantes,
Ferguson.
Or security guards. Talking about police officers. Well, that's part of the narrative, that cops are constantly shooting down black men in the street. That's part of the narrative. You know it. That they're constantly shooting black men down the street. We tired of it. We ain't putting it up with it no more. Well, look, about 100 of them were killed by sworn police officers, slightly less than 100, according to the best figures they can come up with. 100, the overwhelming majority were found to be justifiable homicides. So I'm trying to understand what this epidemic of
and the reason why come these are
out of millions of arrests.
The reason why come these are proven to be justified homicides because in Missouri you have Missouri state statute that defines lethal force. And that statute, the wording in that statute, which is, of course, a statute, is of whatever department or agency that it pertains to, the heads of those agencies interpret the statute, and therefore they come up with rules and regulations. Well, that statute is too broad, it's too vague, and it's not specific, and it needs to be, and it is. They're in the works now. We have black legislators working now to change the wording of that statute. That way you can constrain these police officers. If they go beyond these constraints, and then what they're supposed to do and not supposed to do, then they would be severely punished. That's the way it should be. Nobody's saying that they promote criminality. People want their fifth, they want the guarantees provided in the Fifth and the 14th Amendment of due process. We had another man, Mr. Powell, that was killed just this last Friday. Police was 30, 35 feet from this guy. He was a mental case, and obviously he had a butter knife. Where is these tasers that citizens have spent all this money on tasers? So at what point in time, and I know Dobson indirectly, the chief of police in the city of St. Louis, and it comes to find out the video is not collaborating with the stories that came out in the paper on why and how this guy got killed. The man was murdered.
Okay, now you just got to making a very important point. You feel, you just said, you stated your reason why you think, well, you didn't say your reasons exactly, but you did say or imply that the rules of self-defense, particularly involving a police officer using deadly force, are overbroad and give them too much latitude. Fine. Then you said that they're working on in the legislature changing the law. Again, fine. If the legislature chooses to do that, then the problem to that extent will be solved. However, the law as it exists now give a police officer a certain latitude to use deadly force, but it must be consonant with the 1986 Supreme Court decision involving Tennessee versus Garner, which held that a police officer cannot seize a suspect by use of deadly force because they said under the Constitution it amounts to a Fourth Amendment seizure of a person by using deadly force unless that force is justified by the fact that the person involved committed a crime involving the use of deadly force or force likely to cause serious bodily harm, and lesser means are not available to apprehend them. So given that, the law of Missouri as it stands now is in consonant with that Supreme Court ruling, Tennessee versus Garner, but the state is free to narrow it further if they wish because we have a federalist system under the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. The people of the state of Missouri are free to govern themselves in every matter that the Constitution of the United States and common law decisions by the Supreme Court say that they can. So that's what they're doing. And so then what's the problem here?
Well, the problem is similar as they always have been. And people are working to change this thing. They're going to work to change things in that town politically. They're going to work to change things in those towns, especially with the imbalance and the makeup of the police force itself. You know, one adjoining town, Jennings, had to dissolve its police department because blacks had 99% black community, it was so many complaints coming in on how the interaction between police and the citizens that the city council dissolved after they gave the chief an opportunity to change things, that is, hire more black officers. No, he wanted to stick with the good old boy system and address his officers running wild. So they dissolved the police force, which they should have done. And these other departments that's in the area of Ferguson who have this inbound, not only in the police department, also the fire department also. You know, I'm for one that if the population that you are serving is 99% black, well, that should be reflected in these government jobs that the blacks are paying for. Our kids should not have to drive 25 miles away in the case of Mr. Wilson, who comes from Crestwood. They ain't hiring black people in Crestwood. And, you know,
no black people work in Crestwood. You talking about Crestwood, Illinois?
I'm talking about Crestwood, Missouri.
So
to the point
no black people work for the city government in Crestwood.
I say they ain't hiring blacks. They're not hiring blacks in the police department at the rate, at the percentages that you see, imbalance percentage that you see going on in Ferguson.
Okay.
And
well,
in these other communities.
All right. Well, look. See, last time I checked, police forces are subject to the civilian masters who are elected to administer them. So if you think this is a legitimate beef with those people who are elected to administer them by the citizens who are resident within those towns and counties, that's what we should take it up with.
That's what we're going to do.
Been taken up with it. But
we
to
had
say
a
that a police
problems.
Officer doesn't have the right to defend himself against someone who's caused a serious injury to him that caused his vision undoubtedly to go awry and to risk the possibility of another attack where he might be overwhelmed by that same individual, I don't think so. I don't think any of these other issues have anything to do with that.
Yeah, there's no proof that this guy would receive this injury to his eye. I mean, people are checking medical records in the hospital, Christian Northeast, so on. You're absolutely right, and that's exactly what's going to happen. And many things, even the attorney for the storekeeper say he never pointed out that this was Mr. Brown or so on. You know, there's whoever that was in that video at that convenience store previous moments before the infraction at the door, it shows the person paying for whatever the items was that they was purchasing at the store. So all the, and you know, you denigrate, you know, it tickled me how they bring out this information on this kid. But nobody brings out the information on Mr. Wilson. You know, he come from a broken home. His mama was a thief and a liar. She, you got court records. Wait a minute, you got court records. You got court records where she was given a 5-year sentence for stealing and also forgery. And nobody never brings that stuff out. Didn't have a daddy at the house.
I mean, like Barack Obama?
Well,
okay.
We're talking about Ferguson.
Look, all I'm saying here is that, look, you know, I've heard of the sins of the fathers being visited on the sons. The sins of the mothers, that's a new one. But let's say all this is true about Officer Wilson, his family background's a bit. So he overcame them and became a police officer, by all accounts, with one that's fairly good.
Well, not really, because
Mike Brown shooting stopped, we had this controversy. But
hang on, though,
sorry. Even
nobody
if
came
it
out.
Isn't, wait a minute now, even if it isn't a good record, that is what adjudicatory inquiries are for, to let all the facts come out so we can make an honest assessment on it. And by the way, if this police officer did in fact do a crime that is worthy of either criminal prosecution and or dismissal from the police force, then let it bloody well be. But
well,
I submit to you right
be,
now, we don't know.
It should. Well, we do know about his mama, and we do.
What
we don't know, we don't know. You're absolutely right. We don't know if he is a wife abuser. We do not know if he was a bully in school or in the neighborhood. We don't know if he owed the IRS or behind his car payments, his mortgage payments.
So look at this right. So if he's late,
they bring this information
taxes,
out. They always bring this
no
information
right
out
to
on
use
the black
deadly
man.
Deadly force to defend himself against a criminal attack. He has no right under any circumstance if it turns out he's late on his taxes. Am I understanding
but see,
you correctly?
But
here?
The thing is, but
no,
the
no,
thing
no.
is,
I just want to make it clear. I just want to be clear. is that if he is a tax cheat and a wife abuser and he abandoned his children, he's not paying his child support, am I to understand he has no right of lawful self-defense against a criminal suspect? I'm just
Well, really, he
has
no right being a police officer, because I tested the system out. I went over on Pennsylvania Avenue and got an application for becoming a fireman or police officer at the training center, and I looked at the questions that they asked. And the questions that they asked fell in line with what I just got through reporting. Therefore, if you had a negative on any of those questions, you don't deserve, you would disqualify for the job.
So that means he should be fired from the job then. But you want to put him in jail because he may be lawfully defending himself at the time he was still a police officer? I mean, I'm trying to understand how this inability to separate things. Everything gets conflated into everything else, because I don't think that's the way it's supposed to work. Even if this guy lied on his application, forged documents like somebody I know who's living in the White House right now, say he gave a phony birth certificate to become a cop, that might be grounds for criminal prosecution if the statute of limitations ain't up and if he's an ongoing thing, but it doesn't negate his right of lawful self-defense.
No, it don't negate his right of lawful self-defense. You're absolutely right. But let me ask you another question. At what time is a police officer no longer a police officer, especially when they take their badge off and their name tag? Now, you weren't you a police?
I never did
what,
that. Never in my life. I never came off in a fight.
Wait a minute.
I never deliberately took it off.
When they deliberately be on the line, these are people. These are white males in uniform. You don't know if they're a police officer or not. They don't have a name tag on, and nor do they have a badge. So at that point in time, they're a citizen. If they put their hands on you, you got a right to defend and protect yourself. Am I right?
Listen to me. I want to make this absolutely clear. So I don't make any doubt about where I believe about this. No one ever sacrificed the right of lawful moral self-defense. That's even against a police officer. If a police officer is trying to murder you, you have the right to do whatever you have to stop him trying to murder you. That is your right. Inalienable right is being a human being. And I hope I made that clear. I hope I didn't qualify it one whit. However, you know as well as I do, you're going to have to be able to prove if you had a reason to do it, and if you can, so. But there are, by the way, people who did kill police officers, and it was ruled justifiable homicide. You do know that, don't you?
Well, Indiana has a law that you can kill them. They come in your house unauthorized.
In this case
with Michael Brown, I don't know if you know, is that Wilson told him that I would shoot you. So at that point, this kid's fear for his life. And he's going to defend himself any way that he possibly can.
Wait a minute, police on the line. I just want you to clarify this thing you just said. You said, who said that the officer told Michael Brown, I will shoot you? Where'd that come
witnesses.
From?
Witnesses.
Witnesses. What? Have they come forward identifying so willing to be on the record saying this?
I guess they will be on the record for
saying that. Okay, fine. You have some information I don't have.
But see, here's another thing that there is on record, where you had police officers in the crowd control calling blacks animals and also using the term. I think they used this term to a reporter, I will shoot you. Well, he got immediately taken off. I think he's fired.
So he did wrong. He got disciplined. Well,
they do say these things.
Look, I already know police officers ain't perfect, because I worked with them, remember, for 28
yeah.
years. I already know a lot of them ain't perfect. I knew a couple who went to jail, federal jail, for civil rights violations and other corruption. So I knew three. So I know it happens.
Absolutely, it happens all the time. It happens,
punished.
And they
you
don't get punished for it.
These guys got punished.
I say a lot of them happen, and they don't get punished for it, because we know of a case where a black police officer shot a young man in the face for no reason whatsoever, and nothing happened to him. But the local activists hound the city government until they let him go. And the next two places, communities that he tried to get hired on, the same activism showed up at the hearing and hound them until they forced them not only out of those towns, but they forced them out of the damn state.
So then, like you said, you agree with Thomas Jefferson, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. So in other words, they were eternally vigilant, and they kept them happy. It's government. You got to be vigilant on government. I don't care what level of government, department of government is. They all need to be held accountable, and that certainly includes the police. So if they do it wrong, by all means. But look, I'm talking, in this case, they making stuff up. They making stuff up on this officer.
No,
now,
well,
it would seem to
me
as if, it would seem to me as if, you know, if the facts are enough to condemn him, they should stand alone and he should be condemned by those facts and that evidence. But that's not good enough for these people. They got to go into a narrative of 400 years of oppression and all this other job. They ain't got a damn thing to do with that police officer pulling the trigger on the guy that day.
Well, if we want to talk about making stuff up, I got a friend of mine, Prince Carter, whose nephew, officer by the name of Giraro, chased him down, shot him in the back, then took a gun out of his socks, right out of his shoe, and placed it on him. So if you say that they making stuff up, well, police also come up with drop weapons and all kind of phony evidence
you
also.
You are describing criminal actions. You're not describing police work. That's criminal actions. I mean, I don't know what you want me to say when you describe criminal actions to me, and of which I have no way of knowing the veracity of. I'm going to accept your word for it, and if it is true, they are criminal actions by the police, and they won't be the first, and they won't be the last. You deal with them as they come.
They need to be punished. They need to be sued. See, here's the point. You need to sue these people against their bond and go beyond the bond and go to their personal effects, their savings account, their boats, their bows and arrows, their bowling balls, their house, their skulls chewing tobacco. That's where it should go down.
Well,
and see, here's
another
point. Many people get frustrated. Some people get so frustrated they go home and kick the dog and the cat. Some people get frustrated they go home and they fight their wife. But some people get frustrated that they go out in the streets and start tearing up stuff. It goes on around the world.
Well, and that's why we have
United States interventions.
And that's
and
why
so
we have
the people in Ferguson, whoever, and to say that these outsiders had no business coming from the outside into that town is a damn lie, because blacks in the north went down south in order to fight for blacks who were being mistreated in the south.
And by the way, you also saw that they were willing to accept the consequences of being arrested for civil disobedience because, again, when we talked about that law a little while ago, I don't agree with all law. I don't agree with the law in New York that makes it a crime to tax cigarettes as criminally as they do in New York. There are a bunch of criminals in the legislature in New York who pass these onerous tax laws. It's the law, though. And the Jim Crow laws down south were the law down there, too. And they were willing to get arrested for it to make a point. They knew they were breaking the law. Martin Luther King never said he wasn't. Never. He said, but it was willing to make a moral point. He was willing to oppose it. And that's the same thing here. Well, it's not the same thing here. Because, you know, laws that uphold public order against looting are not morally reprehensible. They're morally necessary to protect a civil society. If we want a civil society, we got to have laws against looting, no matter how frustrated you are.
Well, it happens as it happens. And I don't think that police chiefs should tell people that they can only protest at nighttime. You know, why you want to protest at nighttime when it's dark and cameras can't see as well as they can in the daytime? That's some crazy stuff. But anyway, as I said, and you know, this police chief who was also in charge of the operations during the Jack in the Box caper, he has a shady record himself.
Well, to get rid of him. I'd bring all this up to the legislature, city council, the mayor, whoever has the authority over him, then remove him from office. In some places, a police chief cannot be removed by the mayor. They don't serve at the pleasure of the mayor. They got to be removed by a vote of the legislature or the city council or whatever. It depends. Whatever the mechanisms are available in Ferguson, remove the police chief. You think he needs to get the people in the city to do what they got to remove him and appoint somebody else. Hey, that's what the people of Ferguson want. Yeah, I don't live there. It ain't my city. It's theirs. Let them decide. But to say now we have a right to go out and vote. And by the way, they did declare a state of emergency in Ferguson. The governor did. State level, that's just short of martial law. Just short of martial law. That means that police do have the right to put demonstrations in certain areas. That's the law in Missouri and most every place else. State of emergency was declared. So, yeah, there can be some restrictions on demonstrations, including the areas to which they can go.
Well, I agree with that for the simple reason because, if you go under the railroad tracks, you're in country's Club Hills where there's large or medium-sized shopping center with grocery stores and so on and so on and so on. So those shopkeepers there did not want that type of activity, and rightfully so, because you're in another community. So I agree with that point. But the thing is, people have a right to express their First Amendment protected, their rights protected by the First Amendment, or free speech, which demonstrations is. It should be peaceful, but sometimes things do happen. And even
well,
if they do happen, they should...
It's not a coherent bunch of people. You got people with a lot of different agendas. I mean, you got people there who are conscientious, even though I might think they're misguided. They're conscientious objectors. They want to make a political point. They're trying to make a statement. Then you've got others who simply take advantage of a chaotic situation and doing it to loot businesses. They're criminals. They're not conscientious objectors. Then you got other people who are anarchists who just want to create a state of anarchy to bring it all down, man. And they want to create chaos for the sake of creating. So it's not, look, everybody there ain't got the same agenda. You can't approach them as though they do. I'm a constitutionalist. I believe in the Constitution. I believe in the Bill of Rights. And I particularly believe in the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. So to the maximum extent possible, I think it should not be interfered with. However, there is such a little animal in the common law called the police power. And the police power is that legitimate exercise of government to pass laws and take actions that are necessary for the health, safety, welfare, and morals of its citizenry. Now, there's always an argument about what extent the police power is supposed to assume. But I don't think anybody argues that when emergencies are declared or a state of martial law, which means the Constitution gets suspended, by the way. But I'm talking about in a state of emergency like we got now, kind of like a purgatory between the heaven of civil liberties and the hell of martial law. What you get here is you got to have some restrictions. So that includes the First Amendment and where you might go to protest. After all, you have a right to First Amendment protest in my house. There are restrictions on the right, and mainly it's the government, to government. And Ferguson is government. The governor of Missouri is government. The state police Captain Johnson, he's government. He represents government. So it's on government, and that should be no more than is necessary to control the immediate crisis. And me, I give a lot of latitude for the First Amendment because I want to know what's going on, good and bad. I want
to
know.
I have to applaud, Johnson. I never in my life seen people stand in line to come out and shake hands and hug a police officer around here.
I wasn't too impressed by a lot of things he didn't say. I wasn't very impressed, I got to admit.
Well, the government made their choice. But, you know, there's some things that have been thrown out there. One is that they want police cars that have cameras on the dash and deck, and also the policeman that have them on his person when he's interacting with the public so that these things can be recorded. It has proven that communities around the country that have taken up this technology, you see the incidents of complaints from citizenry about police abuses have dropped considerable.
Man, I couldn't agree more. I think the police can only be helped by cameras on their uniforms and on their dash cams. Because I got sued 5 times in my career for police brutality. 5 times. Every single one of them was from a multiple convicted felon with multiple arrests for police resisting arrest and battery on police officers. The Attorney General of the State of Illinois just took it, and I didn't have to go to court. Because I knew it was John.
Well,
I looked at the guy's record and everything else and heard the statements of the witnesses. It was all John. I know they lied, too. And cops ain't the only ones who lie. I just got news for you. They're not.
No, you're right. But and I hear people complaining about people in the neighborhood not snitching. But, you know, the police have their code of blue. Well, they don't. You know, it's funny. In Ferguson, where you got 50 cops, white, and 3 blacks, and surely these blacks is seeing what's going on. Wonder why come they don't come out and protest that? Is it that they are afraid of their jobs too? Do you think the same thing would happen to them, like Mr. Alcorn, who was the first black superintendent of schools hired in the city of Ferguson? And this is just recently, now within the last maybe 15 months. When he's hired, he noticed that all the teachers in the district is white and all the children are black. So he goes and put in a plan in order to change, to make it more of a balance and not an imbalance, as was reported in this past weekend's Post-Dispatch, which is a local major newspaper. But when he puts into effect a program, a policy to change that, the all-white board fires him.
Well, I can't speak to the motivation of someone as why they do or don't do things. I mean, I'm not in a position to read their minds. I don't know any police officer on the Ferguson Police Department. I will admit there is a tremendous resistance from other police officers to snitch, quote, snitch, unquote, on other police officers. And, I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. Some of it might be because maybe they don't think there is any particular elevated level of police brutality. Some may be delusional. I don't know. I won't speak to it. But all I know is this. If a police officer sees something that he knows is criminal, he has a moral and ethical and legal obligation to come forth and do something about it. And if they're not doing it, they're not doing their job. That's simple.
You're absolutely right. And you know, and you yourself was an outstanding and kept your nose in the right and upright, but you had others on that department that was doing wrong things, putting bad taste in people's mouths. So when they see you coming along, Sarge, they have the same, that animosity spills over to you, which is unfair.
Well, life ain't fair. That's why I got police. It ain't fair. You got people out there who'll take advantage of other people, and we got police power, Constitution, hey, they put together police departments to deal with them. I mean, the people out there, our life is unfair. It's not fair. It never will be fair. I wasn't treated fairly. All my life I've been treated unfairly. So, hey, that's just the way it is. You know, the whole thing about this life we're going through here is an attempt to try to reconcile to the extent we can the unfairness and to keep tyranny away from our door with too damn much government. So it's a balancing act. It's tension. And it's hard. It ain't easy.
You know, another thing that suggestions I had made to Demetrius Johnson, who's has a foundation that does a lot of good things with children, young people, is that he's a radio host on 104.1 on Sundays. He was a former football player, professional football player for the Detroit Lions. I suggest that you put out that the young people have a moratorium, that they sanction and boycott these traffic courts. They have an initiative called Drive the Limit, because by you getting tickets, especially from speeding, you pass these small municipalities, and many of them, on court night, traffic court night, you have blacks wrapped around the building, up and down the block, look like it's a job fair. Let's drive the limit in these red light camera, speed trap municipalities, and stop giving their court system your hard-earned money. You could be using that to do other things to better your life.
Well, I got to admit, I've always wondered any municipality relied upon citizens breaking the law to make up their income. And I thought that was the height of madness, and they either need to raise taxes, or they need to get more business in that will create more tax revenue. Or they need to give up their charter, because it makes no sense at all for me to have a city that's relying on citizen wrongdoing to make their revenue stream. That's the height of insanity. So, look, if there's a speed trap out there, you ain't getting no sympathy from me. It's like New York with their damn stupid onerous tax laws, and this thing where we got Eric Garner choked to death because we got New York cops out there enforcing the stupid tax laws of theirs. It's really, and of course, the reason they called them out there, the reason they had that task force there in the first place, was because the merchants feel they're getting unfair competition. A guy goes down to North South Carolina, buys a bunch of untaxed cigarettes, comes up to New York, and sells them individually. So they're resentful. In fact, they got to pay these onerous taxes up there to, what is that, Syracuse, up there in New York, state capital of New York, and this guy doesn't have to pay them. So that's why they were squawking to the police about it, and guys like him. See, look, the cops are the ones who get caught in the middle of having to deal with a lot of these stupid laws. And by the way, that includes much of the war on drugs. That includes much of the war on drugs. You know, I don't know
well, right.
what I think is stupid. But, you know, the cops didn't pass these stupid laws. And the disruption that the illegal drug traffic brings about to the community is something that community residents are going to complain about. They're going to complain about it. Well, at the same time, ironically, they invite more of it by asking for more police crackdown on it. It's like a vicious cycle that's feeding itself. And they keep voting for the same politicians making more draconian laws. So I don't know. Hey, look, I don't know. All I know is cause and effect is something I believe in very much.
Well, you know, there is a difference in the attitude of police officers. Because we had another instance here in this area where a white perpetrator was pursued, chased, and he took cover in a basement or something, and ended up that the policeman, one of the patrolmen, ended up getting his hand broke. And I have to commend these police officers. They did not shoot this white man, even though the one had his hand broke. They're affording him his due process guaranteed by the Constitution. And I wonder why come all of them cannot interpret when they should use deadly force. It's seeming like it's a different interpretation when it's a white perpetrator compared than when it's a black perpetrator.
But, Bianca, you got to remember, there are millions of arrests made in this country every day. Millions. And many of them for crimes involving the use of deadly force or physical force, where physical violence was involved, and nobody gets shot. 300 a year slain? Now, I know more than that get shot and survive, but, you know, 300-400 a year are slain. And that's not all by the police. Only about 100, you know, that's not all of them by the police. So, and most of them are ruled to be justifiable. I think the police do comport themselves, for the most part, in a satisfactory way involving the use of deadly force. I was a firearms trainer. I trained five of the police officers I trained were involved in deadly force shootings. Five of them. Mm-hmm. All of them ruled justifiable, and they all came back to me and said they were grateful for the training I gave them. And that's one of the things I was proudest of as a cop. That's one thing I was proudest of more than any other. At least when the time came for them to pull the trigger, they had the knowledge and the training to do what they had to do to save their lives and others.
Well, I agree with you. That's the vast majority of police officers are, they do the right thing. They just want to go through their beat so they can go home and be with their family. And you got some out there that's totally, totally off the chain, and they make it bad for the rest of those who try to do the right thing.
Well, think of it for a minute now. I mean, psychotics are abound in every walk of life, and I know they're supposed to have a screening process to keep them out. They're not successful. And look, a lot of these guys may have been okay when they came in, but let's face it, we got to admit, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder seems to exist for everybody but the police. Can't understand it when the police do it. Not that you don't have to deal with it, because it's even of greater consequence when the police are suffering from it and it affects their work. They must be dealt with. Don't misunderstand me. But now we're behaving as though police cannot suffer from it. A lot of these guys are suffering from PTSD to varying degrees. And yeah, they need to be found out, observed, and called out. Either give them rest, give them cures, or relieve the duty altogether. But I don't understand why we have a stressful job human beings engage in, and it gets them, like combat. How many psychotic politicians we got out there? A lot of them are psychos, and they're making laws for the rest of us. Would you really trust Sheila Jackson Lee to implement laws all by herself? Really? That woman is nuts, and she ain't the only one.
Sheila Jackson Lee don't represent me, so I have very little knowledge.
I'm just saying. You know, I'm just giving an example of the kind of nut we got out there who are governing us. She's a federal congress. She gets to vote on federal legislation that affects 50 states in the union and the territories. We got psychos everywhere in every walk of life, including the police. You need to screen them out. And like I said, eternal vigilance is a price of liberty. See, it seems to me that only conservatives understand the fallen nature of man, that man is corruptible and is infinitely corruptible and will always be. Liberals and progressives seem to think you're passing up laws, everything will be fixed. We're telling you it won't be. People are sinners. Human beings are sinners. They are flawed. They are corruptible. They're corrupt. Some of them are flat-out evil. And they will do things they do because of their evil nature. And what we got to do is you minimize the amount of power they have to the extent you can, so when they do get out of control, which was the idea of the Constitution and federalism and all this other stuff and separation of powers, when they do get out of control, the damage they do is minimal. That's the idea.
I agree with
you.
Not
that we're going to get everybody that's going to be perfect.
That's why I frown on this militarization of local police force. We got a town that's got 53 police officers. I know some that's got less, and they got military equipment, 50-caliber machine guns on top of trucks and stuff.
No, I have not seen a 50-caliber machine gun. You mean to talk about Browning Ma Deuce? I have not seen one. Yeah, I've been looking for something like that. I ain't even
That's
seen
what
no
I heard.
Belt,
I didn't go over to Ferguson to see.
I haven't seen any belt-fed machine guns out there of any caliber.
Well, I did see that in Katrina now during at the stadium when General Russell Honoree came in. But they don't need
the military force too. That's what they have. They're equipped with automatic weapons, belt-fed automatic weapons. Crew-served belt-fed automatic weapons is a stock and trade of any armed force.
Yeah, but this thing with these local police officers with
your mic is open, Divine Queen.
M16s and all the other military arrangements, they might even have some rocket launchers. Sarge, this
is
totally crazy.
Now, ever since they first invented automatic weapons, police force in the United States have been using them, and they used BARs back in the 1920s. That's what they hunted down Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker with. The Texas Ranger Frank Henry, he had a Browning automatic rifle. And shot it into the car, just emptied two or three magazines into the car. It's nothing new. Thompson submachine guns, they've been around for a long time. It's nothing new. M4 carbines is considered accurate. I mean, they're accurate. They fire a bullet that can go through car doors and still do some damage.
That's because the Thompson was being used on both sides back in them days.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, but nonetheless, the police would certainly use it. I mean, yeah, the police had an arms race to catch up with the gangsters. But nonetheless, it was a military arm, and military arms have always been in use by the police, ever since they were invented. Mm-hmm. Always. So it's nothing new here. Now, MRAP is a little bit different, but MRAP is nothing more essentially than a big-ass armored car, a little bit heavier.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Bianchi. Good evening, Serge. How are you?
How are you,
Who is
man?
This?
It's Divine. Ebony? No.
Hello, Divine. I knew it was you.
I quickly came to ask you a question, Sarge, and I heard you was talking a little bit earlier about the mental state officers could possibly suffer with.
Yeah,
and I just
PTSD.
Wanted to ask you, right, and I wanted to ask you, do they get regular evaluations on their mental state throughout their career?
Look, you got to remember, we've got I forget how many jurisdictions police sworn police officers are in the United States. There are thousands. Everyone has got different rules. You have to consult that department to find out what they require. The FBI, most federal agencies do, require periodic mental testing of their sworn personnel. Many big cities do. But for the small departments, it's an expense. Most of them don't want to pay for. It's probably safe to say most of the smaller departments don't do it. Some do. But you've got to consult the individual department of which you are speaking.
Wow.
And if they're coming back from the military, they need to have those evaluations.
Yeah,
maybe not. It depends on the individual. Different people react to stress in different ways. Some are actually strengthened by it. Some are totally destroyed by it. It's all individual. I would agree that any police officer looking to work, I would prefer they be mentally evaluated by objective mental criteria intended to determine their psychological suitability for police work. I would favor it. I'm all for that.
I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around the fact that they could be some mentally disturbed law enforcers out there. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but human age activity or agency is not potentially, especially one as public and as widespread as the police, I mean, how could you possibly not expect there would be some at some point in one or even all of them. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is be vigilant and get them out when we find them. That's all. That's all we can do. We're human beings, all of us.
Yeah.
Utopia will not exist on this planet ever.
Well, the thing is, in these communities here, these black communities, they just don't have, they have a distrust for police, especially white police. And I think that these small towns, these towns where you got 90% of your police force, 100% in a couple of towns is all white, that just cannot exist like that. We talk about too many differences. They bring in too many different things to the table that influence their ways of thinking and so on, so on, so on. And also, how would you ever address the problem of unemployment in these high poverty, all black areas? There's nothing wrong with the area being all black. Nobody's containing them there. They feel that they want to live amongst that particular social situation.
Well, my question would be this, Bianchi. This question I would ask. I would ask, are there any practices by these governments that discriminate against black applicants in the hiring process? And I mean legitimately. I'm not talking about just the fact that they're not there. I'm talking about how many applied for the job. Number two, what were their applications or their scores on the testing criteria relative to the others who applied to them? And then I'd make a determination of whether or not they discriminate against black applicants. And if they are, that's illegal.
Well, let me tell you what, you know, the way the firefighters sell that, well, shall I say, to help to alleviate their problems, is that they started providing training and schooling to potential applicant, black applicants, to get them acclimated to what they would see on the exams, get them acclimated in what prerequisites that they need to have. And they don't have that with the youth. You know, I worked with this one school district, which, by the way, serves Ferguson, to try to implement the emergency medical technician license certification in the high school so that when the students graduate, they would have that. It's not that big of a deal. And then when they go to these fire districts, it's all white, you don't have to be begging to be hired. And at that point, the district would send you where you can obtain that certification, or, you know, you pay $3,000 out of your pocket and get it on your own. But for some reason or another, the school district in this particular case, Normie, did not want to do that at that time.
Now, you see, what you just got through saying was the way affirmative action should work. You are seeking to bring the applicants to the level or ensure they meet the level that could be or even exceed it, preferably, the level of testing that they're going to have to go through to get a job. In order to make sure they're qualified. I noticed you didn't say anything about skin color points and racial preference. You said make sure they're qualified and able to take and possibly even exceed the standards to be the best and the first to be hired. And that's the way affirmative action should work. But not just you get skin color points for showing up with the right genes.
Well, fellas, I'm going to get out of here. I really appreciate the opportunity. You know, I just want to say one more thing. With the militarization of local police forces, it makes me feel more blessed with the Second Amendment. I think it should be strengthened rather than we see attempts of deteriorating it. It's there for all.
I agree completely with that. I second that emotion.
It's there for all, and more people should utilize it. You know, you don't want to give up these rights, because once you give up a right, you can never return. It's just like when you talk over Blog Talk Radio. When you put something out there, it's out there forever. You can't retract it.
You know, not without a lot of bloodshed. And when tyranny prevails, you ain't getting it back, probably not without a lot of bloodshed. I think right now we're at the point where tyranny can prevail from almost any quarter, although one in particular is worse than the others. But any quarter is capable of imposing tyranny because they think that, you know, people just can't be trusted to live their own lives and make their own decisions. Well, if we're going to keep tyranny from our door, we better be ready to fight for it.
All right, see you guys.
Okay, good talking to you.
All right, take care, Pianki. Any final words for you, Sarge?
Yeah, look, I don't have any particular axe to grind for this officer or against him. I'm just getting tired of the demagoguery. I'm tired of it. I'm sick to death of it. The racial industrial kind, the usual suspects are out there. We should have no credibility at all. Al Sharpton, a guy of Freddie's Furniture Mart, where 7 people were killed after he demagogued in a protest in New York City when some psychotic supporter is burned the place down and 7 people died. Yankel Rosenbaum, well, you know, was killed in New York in a similar manner. Twana Brawley, Crystal Gayle Mangum, the parasites and usurpers in Koreatown. This guy shouldn't have any credit. He's typical of people in the racial industrial complex to show up every time one of these situations occur. I'm sick of it. I'm more sick of that than I am what Michael Darren Wilson may have done wrong. And I'm really concerned about both, if he did. But the worst thing of it is that we're not, you know, we're not, people are less and less, it seems, amenable to fact and reason, and more prone to actually welcome and embrace irrationality, total lack of reason, any attempt at linear reasoning or logic, and the scientific method be damned. So, yeah, I think we need to step back from it and take a couple thoughts. Yeah, I do.
Appreciate that. Divine Queen, you have any final words as well?
No, I just enjoyed the show. I just enjoyed listening. And it's been good just hearing everyone's own opinions. And keep up the good work.
Awesome. We appreciate you. And I want to let everybody know, Mr. Talk will be back tomorrow. So I had to step in just for today. But he'll definitely be back tomorrow.
Okay.
And no problem. Talk to you later.
Okay.
I want to thank everybody for I'm sorry. You were saying something?
Oh, no. I just said bye. That's all.
Okay. Bye. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. As I said before, Mr. Talk will make his return tomorrow. So definitely make sure you guys come on back to support the show. And thank you for supporting the show again. Love and hugs to everyone in the chat room, on the phone lines, and all you subscribers and archivers of the show. You know, without you guys, none of this would be possible. So make sure you guys tune in tomorrow. Same BTR channel, same BTR time. Enjoy the rest of your day. And that's all for the show. Close the curtains, exit the building, another chapter in the book. And until next time, have a joyous and peaceful day. And remember to continue to be awesome.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
Today's sponsor is Audible.com.